award-winning handcrafted woodwind, brass, and string instruments, private and small group lessons for all ages and experience levels, sales, rentals, and service. Visit classicviolins.com.
This is WGTD-FM. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jess Sheeler, an outreach and career transition specialist at Job Corps, Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW-Oshkosh, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Mangi. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Education Matters, WGTD Gateway 91.1 HD. This is Joe Mangi, and this is the fourth in a series of programs and interviews that feature the good people of Kenosha and Racine being kind, making a difference, helping to make our communities better places to live, to work, and to grow for everyone. As Martin Luther King once said, even if the world were to end tomorrow, I would still plant my apple tree. So, these are interviews celebrating the wonderful people, young and old, who are planting apple trees for us every day. Thank you for listening to us. Today, we have an exciting program. Two great guests with us at WGTD, Keith Herbertschmeyer and Joyce Riphagen. Welcome, Keith. Welcome, Joyce. Keith is a longtime KUSD English teacher, now retired, but he's also a fencing coach at the Recplex here in Kenosha. Joyce is a senior at Westosha Central, born in Best, the Netherlands, but raised here in Kenosha and is a fencing student of Keith's. So, Keith, let's start with you. Welcome, and tell us a little bit about the fencing program at the Recplex.
Well, thank you for inviting us. I'm privileged to be the fencing instructor at the Recplex. I retired from Kenosha Unified School District in 2011, but before I retired, I accepted the position at the Recplex as a fencing instructor, and I've been doing that for the past 14 years. Loving it all the time. These kids keep me young, they keep me happy, and I just enjoy watching them become fencers.
Well, Joyce, thank you for keeping Mr. Herbertschmeyer young. So, Keith, what age group are you teaching?
There are various age groups. I teach six fencing classes during the week. They range from 1 hour to 1.5 hours. The beginner fencers start at the age of 8 and go through 13. If they become to the point where I consider them somewhat advanced, I move them to the advanced program, same age, but now they use electrical equipment. Then I also have the adult groups, of which Joyce is a part, and that starts at the age 14 on up. With that age group, I do have some fencers now that are in their 40s that used to fence in college, and they got their kids involved, mm-hmm. and they realized there's a program open for them also. So I guess it's any age. I've had as many as 84 fencers in various classes.
Wow, 84.
And now I'm in the 40s at present, but it's still growing.
What's great about the sport of fencing? Why would somebody be interested in joining up or signing up? I know it's an Olympic sport. It's one of the original Olympic sports, and the USA has had a number of champions, Olympic champions, both female and male. So what's great about the sport of fencing?
I think I'm going to ask Joyce to answer that one. Why did you decide to become a fencer?
I don't like team sports a lot. I'm not a team sports person in general, and I was kind of trying to make a decision, like, what kind of sport can I still do if I'm not looking to be part of something like a team? And I had seen a fencing demonstration in, like, elementary school, and it kind of stuck with me. It's something that was really cool. And so I tried it out and just really loved it. And it's something that you can be very independent in, but also something that has a great group of people. Like, I've never seen such a huge group of incredibly unique people in one place.
Sure.
And that's just really something that makes the sport special for me.
So how do you practice? Do you practice at home in front of a mirror, or do you practice with Mr. Herberschmeyer, or how do you do that?
You can do drills at home. I don't usually, honestly. I prefer to just practice with my friends, and we I'll get lessons from Coach Keith, or we'll do practice bouts, like, at the rec.
Okay. And so does it help you with physical training?
Yeah, it's definitely a workout. It's something that you can kind of do to, like, it's a combination of muscle training and cardio, typically.
Okay.
And it's also just nice to be active and doing something.
Hand-eye coordination, you have to be quick.
Very much, yeah.
So how do you become fast with your moves? Is it thrust and parry, or you got to explain a little bit of that for our listeners too?
There's a lot of different moves you can do. There's footwork, which is kind of the basis of everything. You have to work on making sure you know your positioning and your timing, and then you can do things like parrying weapons or like lunging and things like that. But the speed and the technique really just comes with time. I've fenced like 80-year-old people that are, they beat me purely on like technique and speed that they've just learned after years and years of fencing.
So I know there are three kinds of fencing, right? There's the foil, the épée, and then the saber. Am I correct?
Correct.
So which is your primary foil, I guess?
I fence mostly foil. I don't have a favorite per se. I'll fence pretty much anything, but I think our group is primarily foil and épée with a couple of like saberists in between.
Okay, so for our listeners, what's the difference?
Well, in foil, you wear your fencing uniform and pants and everything, but you also put on a vest, which is called a lamé, and it zips up the front, and it's sleeveless, and it is a mesh of metal threads, so that when you plug in electrically and the weapon or the tip hits the lamé, a red light goes on. And that's all wired through a body cord, which is attached to your weapon, and also onto a reel around the floor onto a machine. So when those wires connect, the red or green light goes on. If the weapon or the tip of the weapon touches an arm or a leg, then the wire connection is not made, therefore a white light will go on, and the director will easily recognize that it was not a fair touch, it was an off-target touch. Mm-hmm. That is foil. And the foil you can hit on the front and the back, because it's all connected just like a light switch, and you can only score touches in that area. If you're fencing saber, it's basically the same, only the saber lamé includes sleeves. Mm-hmm. So anything on the saber lamé counts as a touch, including the mask for saber. Foil is not. So that's one difference. Along with saber, the saber can have a tip touch, which is the same as a foil, but the saber is a slashing weapon also. So if you cut on your opponent with the bottom edge or the top edge of the blade, the red or green light will still indicate a fair touch, and that will count. Saber is so fast that they now make it mandatory that your back leg cannot cross in front of your front leg when you're fencing.
Wow.
In foil or épée, you can. The third weapon, épée, you do not wear a lamé. It's just a fencing jacket, a mask, knickers, gloves, socks, everything. And with épée, you can score anywhere. If you hit your opponent in the toe, it counts. Anywhere.
I think we have the joke about the saber, épée, and foil fencers.
Go ahead.
They have... So foil fencers, they have a lot of rules that they kind of try to work around. Epee fencers have less rules that they don't really try to work around, and saber fencers say, wait, there are rules?
Oh, I...
Saber fencers just are slashing.
Okay, is this like Zorro and Errol Flynn and those guys?
It's extremely fast, and some of the fencers really love saber. I just have a fencer that's been with me for about 4 years. He has decided to become a saber fencer. So I'm looking forward to see how he does in the tournaments in the area. Mm-hmm. Because the fencers that I have, like Joyce, they fence for 5, 6, 7 years, and then they are of college age, and they actually compete on a college level.
Great.
So that's neat to see. I'm looking forward to see how Joyce will do if she goes to a college that has fencing, and I hope she does.
It's been definitely like something I'm looking at. I don't want to go somewhere that doesn't have a fencing program.
That's that's great. So you're looking at colleges?
Yeah.
So where would you go?
I have no idea. I've been looking in like Europe since I still have my citizenship.
Oh, okay.
And I've been looking around here. I really have no clue.
Fencing is big in Europe?
It's not as big as it is here. People consider it a little bit of an elite sport.
Really?
Whereas here it's a little bit more
accessible. In some countries, it's very large. In other countries, it's not. Joyce is correct. The United States has really become a powerhouse in fencing, along with such countries as Italy and France and Russia and other countries as well. And there are international competitions which they come to the United States, or you can go there and fence.
So I looked up on the internet famous U.S. fencers. General George Patton was a fencing master. He was also part of the U.S. Cavalry. Neil Diamond is a fencer. Keith, you were talking about that.
Yeah, I knew Neil Diamond was a fencer. When I was fencing at Parkside, NYU was a dominating fencing college in the United States, and Neil Diamond was a member of that team, which meant he was extremely good. He was on the varsity.
Wow.
And he was a saber fencer.
Okay.
So.
Winston Churchill, Sylvester Stallone, Teddy Roosevelt, all fencers. So, Keith, you coached fencing at West Point. Can you tell us about that experience?
That occurred years ago, but I was fencing in international tournaments and national tournaments on the East Coast, and I happened to run into the foil coach at West Point, and I would warm up with him in a tournament in New York, and he was an extremely good fencer, Jerry Esponda. And he asked me if I would like to become a coach at West Point. And at that time, I was considering enlisting. Vietnam was going on. I was considering enlisting. That seemed like a great opportunity. And everything fell into place, and I had a wonderful 2 years at West Point.
Wow, wow. So... what made you interested in fencing? How did you get involved?
Again, the word wonderful comes to mind. When I fenced at Parkside, we had a coach. His name is Loren Hine, and he was so dedicated to helping fencers become extremely good at Parkside. He originally started at St. John's Military Academy.
Okay.
He was a math instructor. He came to Parkside, and they wanted him to start a fencing program, and he did. And he devoted his life to helping new fencers excel at the sport, and he did a wonderful job.
So can you tell our audience the scoring in fencing? What is it called, a match, a bout, a competition?
It can be a match or a bout. When it changed from when I was in college to now, but in some respects it's still similar. The similarity is that if you're fencing in a tournament, they're called pools. If you have 45 fencers, they might have pools of five or six or seven fencers. Those pools you fence a match or about up to 5 touches. Every time a touch is scored, the director calls a halt. He puts you back on the on-guard line. Mm-hmm. A scorekeeper keeps track of the score. Once you score 5 touches, you win.
Okay.
In a pool, if you win enough matches in your pool, you can move to the next round. Nowadays, the next round is a direct elimination. If you are a cadet or a younger fencer or a veteran like me, you only get to fence up to 10 points.
Okay.
If you're a fencer like Joyce, you have to fence 15 touches.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you're in the direct elimination rounds, if you lose, you go home. You don't get another chance.
How long does a bout last, typically? Wait.
There's a time limit, I think, of 5 minutes. We don't 100% enforce that at our club. Sometimes you just want to see how something ends, and sometimes it's just practice. But in tournaments, I think there's a time limit.
Tournaments, there's a time limit. It can either be 3 minutes or 4 minutes with 1 minute overtime.
Mm-hmm.
If after the overtime in the first round you didn't reach a total of 5 and the overtime is gone and the score is like 3-1, then they bump up the touches to 5-3.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in direct elimination, you have 3 minute periods and then a 1 minute overtime and a 1 minute break in between each period. If the score is not reached, then it's the same thing. You bump up mm-hmm. the score.
So, Joyce, when you're getting ready with your opponent, can you describe, is there a starting line? Can you just stand up and I'll describe it, or Keith can describe it? What kind of a position are you in? Oh, so you're in a crouch, okay, and you're using your right hand mm-hmm. with your foil, and your left hand is like akimbo, it's for balance? Or
it's just kind
partly
of
balanced, and
partly
you
balanced.
Must keep your backhand out of the way of the front because your backhand is off target,
okay,
and your chest area is on target. So you must keep your backhand away from the target area. If you cover the target area with your non-fencing hand, you receive a warning. If you get a second warning, your opponent automatically gets the touch.
Okay. So you're in your crouch and you have your foil ready. So who gets the first, how do you, a thrust, is that what you call it?
The directors, you have a fencing director,
mm-hmm.
and then you have a judge.
Okay.
And the judge helps the director see parts of the fencer that the director cannot see. When the fencers start, they are on guard lines. A fencing strip is 14 meters long. From the center of the fencing strip, you step back 2 meters. Each fencer steps back 2 meters, which is the on-guard line.
Okay.
The director will now say, fencer's ready, and the fencers will say yes or we, and then the director will say fence, and then fencers fence until there's a light that goes on, and then the director will determine who had the right of way and who deserves the touch. The director will ask the judge for help, and the judge will vote also. Between them, they'll determine who has the right of way and who gets the touch. Once that's determined, the fencers go back to the on-guard line and start again.
I've read about the right of way. That's an interesting term. Joyce, what is the right of way?
It depends. In épée, there's none. There's no right of way. It's who hit first, or if you both hit at the same time, it's a mm-hmm. double and you both get touches. In saber and foil, it depends really on a combination of factors a lot. It depends on who's attacking, or if you had a parry, if you made some sort of like motion to attack. And that's something that for me was a little bit hard to pick up, and I'm still mm-hmm. like, I'll ask a lot of questions about it. Sometimes we'll have to stop a match and be like, hey Keith, we don't know who has right of way here, or
okay.
who gets the touch.
Great. So how do you improve? How do you get better at fencing? How do you you know, move up in skill level?
Well, we just had a tournament, and I was thrilled with the way my fencers fenced because they knew the footwork, they knew the right of way, they knew how to get, I call it, fencing is like a chess game.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew how to try and make their opponent miss or draw them in for a parry riposte. But what I really enjoyed about this past tournament is my fencers finally got to the point where their distance and timing made the difference in the match. And when if you watch the Olympics on YouTube or any world competition, you watch their timing and their footwork, and that makes the difference. And I was pleased to see that happen with these young fencers. They are becoming excellent fencers.
I think a big part of it also is just sometimes you'll go, like, you'll do really, really well for a couple weeks and you kind of plateau.
Sure.
And stuff won't, like, be working. Things, like, you'll be doing the same lessons, but they don't, like, something's just not working.
Mm-hmm.
And a big part of it is you just kind of have to stick with it and be like, well, it's fine. It's just practice.
Okay.
And then just keep going and keep practicing with it.
So it's a thrust, a parry. Can you tell us what a riposte is?
Go ahead.
A riposte is when someone has the attack on you or makes a motion to attack and you step back and take some sort of action so that the right of way is now yours.
Mm-hmm.
So you either do like a bind or you can parry them. And then the riposte is going back and you lunge and you go for like a counterattack.
So if a fencer lunges at you,
mm-hmm.
and you step back and tap their blade, that's called a parry. Now that you have tapped their blade, the director recognizes that person no longer has right of way,
mm-hmm.
especially if after the tap you extend your arm and you go toward the target area, and that's called the riposte.
Okay. So the tip of the foil or the epi, is there a cork on it, or is it rounded, or?
There's a button, which on the electric ones, like, pushes in.
Okay.
And that's how the circuit closes, like the light switch. That's how the
I see.
Wiring goes off. On the practice weapons we use, there's like a rubber button.
Okay.
Thing. It's like a little cap.
So the practice weapon is not electric, and we have to decide who has the right of way.
Oh.
Different than with a fencing machine, which is attached to reels and lights, and then you can, a light goes on and the director basically knows
mm-hmm.
who has the right of way. And if both lights went on, then there's a discussion. It's very easy to determine when only one light goes on. And that makes it easy for the fencers to recognize one missed and one scored.
So you've mentioned three lights so far, red light, green light, and white light. What is that?
Go ahead.
So one person will have a red light, one has a green light, both have white lights.
Okay.
If your red light, like if you're on the left side, I think, you'll have the red light, the right side is the green light. So if the director sees a red light go on, they know somehow the person on the left hit. If
okay.
they see a green light, somehow the person on the right hit. If both lights go on, both people hit, and you have to determine the right of way.
Okay.
The white lights are for, like Coach Keith said, off target, like if you maybe hit the floor or you hit someone's arm when you're in foil or something like that. So those are, they'll light up depending on what you hit.
If you fence in bigger tournaments than what we have at the Recplex, you will fence on a copper strip, which is a big sheet of copper that is 2 meters wide and 14 meters long, and that's grounded. If your weapon hits the floor, the light will not go on. You don't have to worry. You can hit the floor and continue to fence, and the action won't stop until the light goes on.
Okay. So, Joyce, tell us about your most glorious moment so far, your happiest moment, your biggest victory.
I don't have too many yet. I don't fence in a lot of tournaments. What's maybe my favorite thing in fencing, though, is when you've been working on a move for, like, ages, like weeks or months, and you finally get it to work,
mm-hmm.
I think that really happened for me in the tournament this past week. I've been working on like a, you kind of go in and you bind and you flip up. Like you go in and flip and then try and get it. It doesn't make a lot of sense like this, but.
You go in and you flip? Is this
like you?
No, she's doing is, she's at the point now where she can use quicker moves, and what she's doing is she can either circle her opponent's weapon and flick it out of the way and score a touch, or she can circle his blade, making him try to parry her weapon, and he can't find it, and once his weapon's removed from the area, she can go in for a direct touch.
So finally seeing that work is, like, really nice.
And her timing in that last tournament, she took second in the tournament, and she was very, very close to causing a fence-off with the person that won, and she had two beautiful distance timing lunges, which just made me smile. They were so pretty to watch.
That's great. So tell us about your best move. Was that your best move, the one you just described?
My best move, maybe not my best move, but definitely like kind of my staple move would be a turn, which I use a little bit too much, actually. It'll be, I kind of angle my body towards whoever I'm fencing,
right?
Which usually would not be great because you're giving them way more target.
Mm-hmm.
But then you, as soon as they go for an attack, you twist and you turn your body around at the same time that you extend.
Okay.
So they're going for the hit, but you kind of turn out of the way and hit them.
So her opponent is on offense. She turns her body for a counter move, which can either be called a stop hit or a counter attack, but in her position, it's a stop hit. And if she's successful, her light will be the only one on.
Yeah, those.
And they'll miss her target area.
Wow.
They're not the best, though, because you really, they don't work 100% of the time, because if you don't turn fast enough or if they were anticipating
they
your turn.
They have the right of way.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
Just a little humor. One of my favorite movies of all time is The Princess Bride.
We all love the print. That's a thing. Everybody
so is this what you're doing?
It.
Somersaulting and left hand, right hand, and you're
no. That's TV fencing.
Okay.
Yeah, that's. I worked with my school's drama department because they had some onstage fencing for a production of The Addams Family, and it was kind of funny to see that difference that I'd never really thought about before, because it was foil fencing, but they used sabers, so you could hear the like swishing sounds, and so it would look a lot cooler. And all the moves were really big and dramatic. And it's we would never do that, but it is fun to watch.
So you have a favorite fencing movie?
The Princess Bride.
The Princess Bride?
Yeah.
Keith, how about you?
Same here. I love that type of humor. And I love, we'll get to the Recplex. Princess Bride was on last night.
Okay.
Yeah,
everybody's making
and
references
these
the whole time.
These fencers know so many lines from The Princess Bride.
So for all of the old-timers out there, my favorite hero was Errol Flynn.
Sure.
And
he was a fencer also.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he, you know, the Captain Blood and all of those guys. And any realism to any of those sword fights?
None. They do use, everything is outlandish when they fence in a movie. It's much smaller. Timing-wise, when you're fencing like in the Olympics, though some of the Olympians make big, huge moves when they are in fighting, and when you're in fighting and you're so close to each other, then you have to swing your blade around to try and score touches behind your head or over your back. But those are not moves that you are trying to. You're trying to keep small and fast. If you ever watch baseball, there's a strike zone.
Right.
And the batter keeps his bat ready to swing through the strike zone. When you're fencing, think of your opponent's torso as the strike zone also. And you want to keep your weapon in front of you in that strike zone, one, to score a quick touch on your opponent, but also to protect yourself from an opponent lunging at you. If your weapon is still in the strike zone, it's easier to get a parry or a bind and move your opponent's weapon out of the way.
Okay. Everybody, this is Joe Manji, Education Matters, WGTD Gateway 91.1 HD. And we're really fortunate to have Keith Herbertschmeyer and Joyce Riphagen with us today.
we're talking about the sport of fencing. So the equipment, there's a jacket, breeches, socks, shoes, the mesh, the chest protector, the lame. What's a plastron and a glove with a gauntlet? Do you guys use that?
Yeah, the plastron is, we call it an underarm protector. It's like this weird half T-shirt thing that you kind of strap on, and it's padded.
And it's inside.
You keep it first.
Okay.
It's required if you go to, like, tournaments or things like that, just because.
It's a protective.
Yeah, a lot of people, it's kind of over, like, your chest and your shoulder. And other than that, the gauntlet, I think, is for the glove with a gauntlet, I think, must be for saber.
Yeah, it's just a fencing glove. That's all it's called now. It's a fencing glove. And it has some Velcro on it so that when you slip the glove on, you can put the body cord through a part of the glove and then close the glove on your forearm so that you're completely protected. That body cord gets plugged into your weapon. The other end of the body cord goes up your arm, down your back, and plugs into a floor reel at the back end of the strip. Mm-hmm. On that floor reel, there's a floor cord that runs to the scoring machine. And once all that's plugged in, then a fencer can fence, and when lights are turned on, the director can determine right away.
Yeah, and that's why sometimes, I know my little brother especially, he'll be like, oh, you should, like, jump up and, like, do a flip while you're fencing. Like, they'll never see it coming. And I'm like, I would get so tangled. That
sure.
would never work.
Yeah, okay.
And that slows you down.
Yeah,
it doesn't
of course.
Speed you up.
Of course. So parents would ask, is fencing safe?
Oh, 100%.
So you've never been cut up or poked?
You'll get bruises, but you get bruises with every sport. If you're going out and playing football, you're going to get a concussion possibly
sure.
at some point. There's
at issues
the
level
with everything.
That we fence at, especially for beginner fencers, it's extremely minimal. When you get to extremely good fencing and the fencers are going as fast as sprinters, there is a possibility of a weapon breaking. And with that sharp edge of the broken weapon, if the fencer continues to fence, a fencer might get poked in the leg or the arm.
Sure.
Yeah, it's really...
But as far as head injuries, everything is so protected.
And when you get to a tournament, they do what's called punching your mask, where they take, like, this sharp little thing and they test your mask to make sure there's no holes.
To see if it's safe.
Yeah,
wow. We're careful about that. I know... Everybody always has their shoes tied. Everybody's equipment is closed up and zipped up. And you're still going to get bruises, but it's nothing.
Bruises. That's interesting
awful.
Because for a novice, you would think, okay, fencing, you're going to get cuts or slashes, but not bruises. How do you get bruises?
Well, you're getting most of the touches are thrusts.
Okay.
So it's basically just a lot of force in one spot.
Keep in mind, this is a metal. It's a piece of metal coming down to one point, and you have a person weighs over 100 pounds, 100 to 200 pounds, unless you're a very beginner. And when they concentrate that tip on one area, there is a chance of getting a bruise, but only a bruise. With my beginner fencers, and myself included, I wear an underarm protector that is padded.
Okay.
And that has made a huge difference. I have very few bruises now.
Okay.
The majority are like little bruises on your leg because you'll parry something into your leg.
So what does it cost for fencing? I mean, everybody's got their own equipment, right? So
if you decide to sign up for a 5, 6, or 7 week fencing session, we provide all the equipment for the beginners. If a beginner decides he wants to have his own equipment, because we are a club and we get a 20% discount, I work that out with the parents and we pass that 20% discount on to the fencers. If a fencer outgrows their equipment and I have used equipment, I will swap them that equipment for free. So if they buy fencing jacket or pants, and they outgrow those, or a glove, and they, if they gain 100 pounds, they can keep swapping for free.
Yeah.
If you are an advanced fencer, then I'll still give the 20% discount, but now you have to buy your own equipment. And with that equipment, that enables them to fence electrically at the Recplex, tournaments here, tournaments around the state, tournaments around the country. They will be, legal to fence anywhere in this country with the equipment we provide.
Yeah, and the stuff, like, it lasts. I've had the majority of my stuff for probably about 3 years.
Wow.
It's as long as you don't fence super violently.
So if you're not a wild fencer, your equipment can last a long time.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Keith, youngest fencer, youngest student, and oldest student.
Youngest student I have right now is about 7.5 years old. I let him become part of the program, even though he wasn't 8, because he had an older brother.
Sure.
And he wanted to fence, too, so I let that happen. My oldest fencer right now is in his 40s.
Okay.
And I have three adult fencers in their 40s. Most of my advanced adult fencers are like Joyce, they're high school kids.
When's the next sign-up period?
The next sign-up period just started June 4th. If anybody wanted to sign up, they really wouldn't lose out because I try and set up classes that meet 2 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So if a fencer jumped into the program right now, in order for them to catch up, they would come twice a week instead of once a week, and that would enable them to catch up.
Okay. So, Joyce, funniest thing that ever happened to you while fencing?
Oh, there's so many things. I think sometimes you just pause and you realize how ridiculous something is. Like, two people will be just trying and trying to hit in an infight, which is when you're really, really close together, mm-hmm. and we just keep missing, or, like...
the person's, like, 3 feet away from you and you can't hit them?
Or less. 1 foot. And
really?
That makes it difficult because
yeah,
you
because the
have so many weapons.
Wow.
Yeah, everything.
So is this like Muhammad Ali and rope-a-dope where you're struggling with somebody and
you can't touch your opponent.
If you if you touch them with other than your weapon, that's a warning typically.
Okay.
Or sometimes I think we weren't even fencing. After we fence, we try to help Keith clean up a little bit and you know, we always have a little bit of a race for who can get the most tape off the ground because we set up our strips with tape.
Oh.
And I was going for a piece of tape, and one of my friends was also going for a piece of tape, and he lunged for it and slid, and I tripped over him and had this, like, it should have been in slow motion. It was this beautiful, like, cinematic, like, flying fall. And, like, honestly, I wish I had gotten it on video. I would have sent it somewhere to someone.
Oh,
it was
okay.
Hilarious.
These kids are a joy to watch. They pull pranks on each other. They tell each other jokes. They're extremely intelligent, very witty, and they're always smiling.
Oh,
and I consider it a privilege to be the instructor at the Recplex.
That's great. That's great. Keith, funniest thing that ever happened to you while fencing?
Ooh, some of them I can't tell.
Well,
I'm sure.
On the air.
Most of them are with my younger fencers because they come up with the weirdest one-liners that are amazing. And the last one I can think of, and I hope everyone can appreciate this, is sometimes a young fencer comes out on the strip and he forgets his mask.
Uh-oh.
And then I say, well, are you going to fence without a mask this time? He goes, oh, no. And one of the fencers sitting on the sidelines said, yes, he is. He's just going to use the safety squint and squint his eyes and fence without a mask on. And everyone laughed at that. I guess he had to be there, but it was fun. Also, at the end of the class, toward the end of the class, we have what's called a three-weapon tournament. And during that three-weapon tournament, I kids like to tell jokes, so I say, okay, does anybody have a joke? And then they'll tell their jokes. And that just draws these fencers so close together. So I just have a lot of fun watching them.
I think, honestly, a couple of weeks ago, I couldn't find one of my shoes, and I was just holding one shoe, and I looked up at my friend, and I went, Houston, we have a problem, which isn't all that funny, but I was dying.
Houston, we have a problem. So that leads me to the kids at Westosha. They must know you're a fencer. What do they say to you? Do they talk to you about it, or kid
actually,
you, or tease you, or they're proud of you, or what?
There's a couple other fencers at Westosha that, you know, they fence at the Recplex also. But mostly, honestly, the reaction is just like, whoa, you fence? Like, people still do that? Or, like, you stab people?
Uh-oh.
Like, it's
completely
mostly
opposite.
People just think
they
it's
just don't
get it.
In that
yeah.
room.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
It is the kids that I get to sign up, they once they sign up, they're almost hooked immediately.
Keith, your most glorious moment in fencing.
Oh.
What's the story you would tell your grandkids? You beat who and how did you do it?
I have fenced fencers that were ranked in the world. I have beaten some national champions, come close to world-ranked fencers, but I just found this out a few years ago. And this is back from years and years ago. I fenced in a tournament in the Midwest, and myself and another fencer from Parkside, we all tied at the end, and we fenced a round-robin barrage, actually two times, but three times fencing each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I had beaten this guy from Wayne State University, and he was from Australia. And I did not find out till a few years ago, because I really didn't pay attention, because we were not part of the NC2A, but this fencer that I had beaten twice in a row, he won the NC2A tournament 3 years in a row. And that is unheard of. I've never heard of anybody doing that. If I had beaten him one more time, I would have finished ahead of him, but I finished second.
Wow.
And I don't mind finishing second to someone like that.
Mm-hmm. So do you get any trophies or medals, or do you get miniature swords, or what do you get if you win?
We have medals for our tournaments, and then we have one trophy that, like, whoever wins the tournament, their name will get engraved on it, but that stays, like, at the club.
Okay. So getting back to practicing, do you do squats, or how do you prepare your body? What do you do?
I'm in actually typically a couple, like a weightlifting class at Central. So that typically takes care of it for me. But I do know some people, they go really all out and they will do like balance, like training and things like that, which is really, if you're going to like outside tournaments, people will put in a lot more effort. Some people just do the fencing because they just see the fencing as the workout, and that's totally fine, too.
What I try and do for these kids is instill on them the importance of footwork. Once they do footwork, I give them fencing lessons. From the lessons, they go into actual fencing, and then at the end of the night, we go right back to footwork again.
Okay, so footwork is key. That's
it's
the
real
key
component.
Big
key. Footwork is absolutely key.
Okay. So, again, everybody, we're with Keith Herbertschmeyer, the fencing coach at the Recplex, and Joyce Riphagen, a student at Westosha. And we're coming to the end now. This is Joe Mangi, Education Matters, WGTD 91.1 Gateway HD. One last thing you'd like to share with the audience, Joyce, about the sport of fencing.
If you're kind of on the fence about, like, maybe I should try this or maybe I shouldn't, just try it. Like, sometimes people are worried that they're not going to be good or that it's going to be painful or that they won't be able to pick it up. And, of course, you're not going to be good right away. But it's such a great sport and just such a good time and such a great group of people that it's absolutely worth a little bit of uncertainty or, like, a little bit of worry at the beginning.
Okay. Thank you so much for being with us. This has
been
awesome. The time has flown by. Thanks, Kenosha and Racine, for listening to us. Again, it's WGTD 91.1 HD. We appreciate it. When given the option